This is the Tunnel Rat Alert. Civil defense information will be broadcast at 640.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Y2K. How can we prepare?
Stop a few of their machines and radios. Throw them into darkness for a few hours.
We are fighting for our lives. My family must survive.
Over 5 years, 1,000 gallons of gas, air filtration, water filtration.
Coming at you from the frozen tundra that is East Central Alberta, Canada, streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, and Odyssey. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. I am Toolman Tim. Today is, yes it is, March 3rd, 2024, and this is episode 431 of Workshop Radio. In just a moment, we are going to bring on our guest, the intrepid commander of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. It's going to be a good one. I want to say a long time, friend. It's been three years now. So we've known each other, hung out in real life a bunch of times. But we'll remember our one sponsor of the evening, and that is Amy Dingman of A Farmish Kind of Life. She reached out. She was second in line, I believe, after Fortress Canine. She said, "What can I do to support your channel?" I said, "Hey, I've got a sponsorship segment open on the podcast. If you want the Sunday evening one, it's yours." She's a good friend. She was honestly somebody who mentored me a little bit, showed me a little bit of the ropes when it came to podcasting. And so if you're looking for someone who has the ability to tell you how it is, where you need to go, and how long you need to do it, but with a smile on your face and you do it happily, add A Farmish Kind of Life to your podcast catcher. And with that, guys, let's bring on my good buddy, Big Bad James. How are you?
Doing good, man. I didn't know I was big and bad, though, until this moment.
Well, bad, you know, bad in a good sense, right?
Sure, yeah.
That's what all the youngins say, right? That's the fancy word. I can't keep up with the TikTok lingo. I don't know about you, but
I wouldn't even dare make an attempt. I have a 12-year-old, and I just drag along behind him like cans off a wedding, newlywed car, you know, whatever you say.
Reminds me of Grandpa Simpson on the Simpsons when he used to say, you know, I used to know what it was, and then they changed what it was, and now I'm in trouble. That's how I feel, like Grandpa Simpson.
Yeah, sure. That's what's their time, right?
That
we
is
gotta,
true.
We got to get out of the way and let them hijack the culture. Hell, we didn't do it many favors, so it seems, right?
You know, it's funny. That seems to be a theme lately. And I got to say, partly maybe because I've got two Gen Zs who are, you know, about to turn 14 or whatever that next generation is.
I never know which. I don't even know what I am.
We won't know until 30 years down the road, because I grew up being a Gen X, and now they try to tell me I'm a millennial. So whatever, it doesn't matter, right? But I'm actually optimistic about the youngins. I think,
they
have. Maybe it's because they've had such a bad example from kind of the intermediate generations, but I guess I'm optimistic about the entrepreneurial spirit and about the fact that they know things need to change.
Yeah, that's huge. I'd say our kids certainly didn't have the luxury of the 90s.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which was like the sort of blinder was just attached to the head, you know, and it was like, oh, let the good times roll, watch the great movie. I mean, my kids, as young as they are though, Tim, they recognize it. They sometimes tell me, I wish I grew up when you grew up, because, you know, things like malls, I tell them about like how we would hang out at malls and all that kind of stuff, and they're like, I just can't even, you know. So, and then they got hit with COVID, you know, and that had varying effects on varying people, but I think every kid was like, wait, what happened?
Your guys were right. I mean, my guys were at that age too. I think it was grade 5 when it happened. And I'm telling you, especially the youngins, like my wife, we run a daycare, multiple daycares now. And there was a lot of kids who came in that were COVID babies that were, their growth was definitely held back. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We put our kids through the ringer because we were the first people in their school. Youngkin came in Virginia. I live in Virginia for your listening audience. Youngkin came in and said, you know, masks can be parents' choice. Like, he was the first voice of reason in Virginia through all this hell after Northam shut the schools down for a full year and a half. Youngkin comes in and says, all right, we'll bring kids back to school, and we're not leaving it up to the state or the teachers or the individual school. It's the parents' choice if the kids want to wear a mask or not. and our kids were. Actually, it was my two kids and then one other little girl, an adorable little girl named Bernie, who rolled into school with no masks on.
Good for that.
And I said, you know what, man, they never gave us any crap about it either. They didn't care. They were right on board. And it was really fun to sort of watch the masks fall from the rest of the classmates in time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they had that weird, you know, this is like the most crazy thing that you compare that to, like the most crazy sort of stance that you took in like third and fifth grade. You know what I mean? How old my kids were. I think my one was in fourth. No, my one was in fifth. My one was in kindergarten.
So isn't that crazy? Yeah,
they've definitely come up with a different set of tasks laid before them for sure.
I had a conversation with Charlie today and we were talking about her future plans and stuff. And somehow the concept of a landline phone came up and she's like, you know, I'd really like to try to use one of them sometime.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a whole nother. I tell them about that too. My oldest is getting to that point where he's at that point now where he does his hair and he wears cologne, but he doesn't like girls, Dad.
Right.
Now yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it changes.
No, he definitely is into the girls. He just doesn't want to admit it. You know what I mean?
Didn't want to tell it to good old dad yet.
But it's, yeah. So I always tell him about, like, yeah, we would sneak and talk on the phone all night with our girlfriends. And, you know, if mom would pick up the phone, you'd have to, like, then she'd come up the steps. Were you on the phone?
I think one of the best things about kids, though, is now that they're at a certain age, watching some of my favorite movies with them is like getting to watch them for the first time all over again.
Oh, yeah.
We watched Dazed and Confused the other night, and Charlotte was legitimately sad it was over. She's like, I want to watch it again. It's just one of them movies you get into the world, and you're like, oh, you don't want to leave, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got a ton. You know, the craziest movie in my household is the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it is the showstopper. It's like whenever we are having a family night in, it almost always ends up with like, Dad, let's watch Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I love it.
I have no idea, you know? Not Rudyard Kipling. Who is it? What's the guy's name? Do you know? Or should I think harder? Oh, no.
It's all right. It's a Sunday night. It's been a long weekend.
My son loves all that guy's stuff, man. He absolutely loves all his stuff. Like the witches movie he loves. He read the Henry Sugar before that came out on Netflix. He used to listen to that to fall asleep, actually, as an audiobook.
Is it not Ronald Dahl, is it?
That's it. Roald Dahl, yeah. Willy Wonka.
Roald Dahl. I was halfway there.
You were way closer to me. I was thinking M.C. Escher in my head. I was way off.
You know, before we shoot the breeze for too long, I should get you to introduce yourself because there's a lot of new folks around the workshop.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I am in chat too, guys. I'm sorry about that.
I know you are good, brother. That's my own fault. I told everybody it's just going to be like two friends catching up because it's really what ends up happening. So
I tried to get in here early so we could get some of that stuff out of the way. Some of that. I miss you. I miss you, Tim. Give me a bear hug out of the way. But I'm James Walton. Sure, no problem. I'm James Walton, I should preface the intrepid commander with the fact that I don't know how many people know who Stephen Mencking is, but he did another phenomenal Reliance program at the Prepper Broadcasting Network today on Sunday, and he is like the older brother I wish I had, I guess. But I actually think he's younger than me now that I think about it, but he's way more mature. Anyway, when I bought the Prepper Broadcasting Network in 2018, he asked me, so what should I call you now? Should I call you the owner, the CEO? And I said, both of those are way too serious for a guy like me. And he said, how about the Intrepid Commander? And I said, dude, that is the perfect, perfect name. So that's the moniker I go by. Most people, I think by now, know it's in jest largely, but I love it. It's great. It's perfect. What that entails is, you know, manning the monstrosity that is the Prepper Broadcasting Network week over week, which is I think it's a 15 host podcast network right now. And we do like 17, 18 shows per week, depending on whether we get our Reliance from Stephen Mencking. And Toolman Tim is there with his Prepping Weekly show, which always is phenomenal. I love that. I'm actually torn, Tim. I don't know if I like preparedness better than this week in prepping or not. I mean, That's a sweet show. I hope I bet your audience loves that little.
That has grown, like it has blown up, and it honestly, it is the culmination of 4 years of podcasting. All these little segments I used to do, the things that hit it off with the community, and it is, oh dude, it is, yeah, thank you. I love it. And preparedness is awesome too. Preparedness just hits a wall after a while. You know, there's only so much home maintenance you can tie in with it, but every time I can always bring it back around. I can do a segment on This Week in Prepping and oh, thank you. I appreciate it, man. That has been.
Oh yeah, man. That's a great show.
That's yeah. Fun. I love
it. Another kudos I got to give you. I talked to Roseanne from Civil Defense, the TACDA website last week.
Okay.
Your obsession with the Civil Defense kind of spurred in me and Dave Jones this idea of like, so what's really going on? Oh, Ellen is in chat. What's up, Ellen?
Oh yeah. She's in all the time. This is great. I love seeing Ellen.
That's great. Garden Girl's with us. My accomplice. That's a long story. She knows what I mean. Yeah, I appreciate you turning me on to that because now I'm going to kind of see what we can get going from a promotional perspective to really try to move the needle again for real civil defense in the United States because it's.
You mean bottom up as opposed to top down?
Yeah, definitely bottom up. Yeah, definitely neighborhood level, right? Because top down, I emailed him. I got like 3 weeks later, I got an email back. No, no offense to the lady. I don't really even know her yet. We just, you know, but she was like, what do you have in mind? We have no money, basically.
James is like, well, that's how I started PBN. So
that's
we're
how I started company. Everything in my life for sure. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
What do you what brought you in tonight? And we've been wanting to catch up for a while, but do you want to start with kind of the state of the Prepper Broadcast Network or anything
particular
on your heart, brother?
We could talk PBN. I guess it's probably worth noting also that I spend a massive amount of my time also writing in the prepping and survival world. So I podcast and freelance write also. The day job, like the Clark Kent is the writer. And then Superman comes out at night to hang with Tim. So I'm always in this prepping and survival world. And we're always trying to, particularly over at PBN, to, you know, find new little nooks and crannies to get into at PBN. We have, I think since the last time I've been on, we have our new host, L. Douglas Hogan, who you met at Prepper Camp.
Yes.
He's become sort of the... I'll say he's sort of solidified this idea going forward that I think Prepper Camp has to produce a new host every year.
I can believe it.
No pressure. But it's been Matter of Facts podcast 3 years ago, Sarah Hathaway the year before, Douglas this year, or the year that just passed. So now 2024, you know, hopefully I get lucky enough to bump into somebody and just, you know, want to be a host. Because the funny thing about my being a host on PBN is when I was freaking out about being not prepared way back in 2011, I happened upon the Prepper Podcast Network and they were just running ads for a host. No prepping experience required. You want to be a host here at PPRN is what it was called. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just sort of a passing of the torch that we have to do on a regular basis, right? Something like that.
Well, if we need someone else from the Commonwealth, sounds like Ellen from Down Under might just be the candidate. So she's volunteering.
Oh, man. So. Ellen from Australia, right?
Yes.
That would be cool. That would definitely be cool. We had some great, we had a couple ladies from England who did an awesome job for a very short period of time. But they're doing those Twitter rooms now. What are they called? Rooms at Twitter?
Yeah, I think so.
They're really cool.
Yeah.
I like those. I think that's pretty cool. Everybody gets to talk. I mean, you allow who you want to talk, but everybody gets to kind of talk in those. It's kind of cool. It's almost sort of AM radio-esque in a way. That's the vibe I got from it, you know? So
I got this kind of goal. You know, we talk about big, hairy, audacious goals around here. And I've always said Mike Rowe as a guest, and I want to get This Week in Prepping on terrestrial radio somewhere. That's what my Thursday show. It's going to be, you know, that's why I've kept it PG and sort of AM, you know, either it's probably going to be conservative or, you know, prepper kind of bent terrestrial radio. I'd love to get it on there sometime.
Yeah, we probably need to just do it.
Yeah, it would be
probably
fun.
We probably need to just start our own radio station altogether. You know what
so
I mean?
So many things we could do. I know.
Because, so the podcasting thing, you probably know, is going to go through some radical changes, I think. Well, has went through some radical analytical changes at the very least at the beginning of the year with iTunes and all that. And the news out of podcasting is real doomsday too. Imagine that, as far as like advertising dollars and, you know, people listening and all that kind of stuff. But I also think it's probably headed for a bit of a censorship lockdown, if I had to guess. I had one.
You want to talk about news a little bit? Because that's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, that's fine.
No.
Yeah.
What you're talking about right now, the censorship end of things.
Sure,
did you see the new bill that Trudeau wanted to pass? Or that
is this the
on?
One where you go to jail if you hate speech or whatever?
Yes, but it's worse than that. It's we can put you under house arrest if we suspect you might cause a crime or do a crime.
Oh, it's a minority report bill?
Right there, brother. Yep.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea what to say. I mean, I wish I could give you hope. I have hope. Like when some of these crazy things come across here in the States, things are happening where, you know, like these weird groups are jutting out and making a difference. And I don't know. I don't know enough about it up there. And I don't just want to say sucks to be you. You know what I mean? Because I feel like Canadians get too much of that lately. Like, it's just too, it's like an onslaught of like, oh, they're fucked. I don't know. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. That's the Canadians. You know, we, and we're just too damn polite. We just roll over and take it.
But you do have an election coming, right?
Yeah, we sure. We're like 2 years out yet. But it could get triggered at any time because we have what they call a minority government up here, which means, you know, we have multiple parties. So they didn't get 50%. So if everybody gets pissed off at everybody, they can dissolve the government, blah, blah, blah. You know how it is. So,
yeah, you need a tactician up there, somebody to get stir the pot up a little bit legally, you know, safely, non-violently. But I think you need you need like a Canadian Douglas Murray up there. You listen to him at all?
But it's really hard to
get you have any no traction. Voice. Yeah, you have no voice because they just shut you down.
Yep. And it was even, you know, they came out the other day. And they said that the government implementing the Emergency Act when the truckers did their thing was unjustified. Sure, yeah. And over a majority of the country still believes that it was totally fine to do it. So you're up against a wall when that happens, you know?
Yeah. I wonder about that, though.
I know. It's over true.
No, I wonder about over half the country. Like, did they ask you?
No.
Exactly.
<They're not> gonna...
But I'm just saying, you know, when they come out and say 50% of Americans believe this, I've never been polled. I've never been asked one question my whole life by anyone. Hey, do you believe this? Do you believe that? So whenever I hear those weird stats, I get weird about them. I even don't necessarily like reporting on them a lot unless they're making my point. But a lot of times you look at things like that and you're like, I don't know. Like, I don't know anybody either. I don't know anybody that's ever been polled, sat down, cut phone, you know. Yeah, I like Joe Biden. No, I hate Donald Trump. Yeah, I love Donald Trump. You know, I don't know anybody who does that. But like, every day you get a poll, 53% say Biden could, you know. I don't know who's doing these statistics. But
they seem to be less reliable than they used to be, too. Like, I mean, look at the last American election, you know.
Yeah, imagine that.
So, yeah, Kevin Murdoch.
AI generated.
Says lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kevin. I think you're right on the money for sure.
I wanted to pick your brain on something, James. Before we go back a little bit. Yeah. You were talking about you do a lot of freelance writing.
Yeah.
How has the AI revolution upended your turnip cart?
Not at all.
Why?
Not at all.
I knew that'd be your answer.
I don't know. I don't know if it's... look, there's some cool stuff. I mess with AI a lot. There's some cool stuff that you can do with it. I think particularly the industry, the niche that I write in, this survival and preparedness and outdoors and bushcraft and all that kind of stuff that I do. I think it's hard to do. I think it's hard to generate a real reliable voice, a real personable voice over a 200-page book, which I ghostwrite a lot of books. I do a lot of blog content as myself also. So, you know, like I work for or with, you know, several different blogs in the prepping world. And my, you know, I'm James Walton. So there's no benefit for them being like, well, let's AI James Walton now. You know what I mean? And the truth be told, I think people have quickly found out that the factual information out of AI is suspect at best.
Right.
You know, like it will undoubtedly lie. When I remember I told you I was about Mirror Safety and I was writing for them and they had put out a new product. I don't even want to talk about the product, but they put out a new product and it we'll just say it wasn't a water filter. And I just was playing around to see because they were early adapters of the idea of maybe let's use AI in our blog. And a lot of people were up in arms. In fact, that a previous host of the Prepper Broadcasting Network jettisoned out of there the moment they said it. Totally quit, up and quit, gone immediately.
Wow. And, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, you know, all that stuff, but you know them. So it was this new product and it wasn't a water filter. I'll just go with that.
Sure.
And I said, tell me about this product and what it does just to see, you know? And it didn't say, I don't know exactly what this product is because it's new. It said, this is a water filter that will filter your water and make it clean for your family and safe to drink. And this was over a year ago now. This is probably a year and a half ago when ChatGPT first came out. So from that moment on, I was like, oh, this thing will lie.
Right.
So who's ever, you know what I mean? So who's going to use it? Particularly when you're writing content that's like, how do I survive and stay alive? Let's ask AI so they can tell me to put a gallon of bleach to a gallon of water, stir it up, take a drink. You know what I mean?
Don't forget your ammonia while you're at it.
Yeah, I had a great year last year freelance writing, so I don't think it's affected me at all. And particularly in our niche too, in our world, you know, if I can't imagine what somebody would do if they were reading from a blog, you know, if you're a prepper and survivalist and you're reading from a blog and you're faithful to it, or you're reading a book and you're really enjoying it, and then you find out it was written by AI,
right?
Seems like an enormous risk for that company to take, because then you're going to lose all credibility. You know, nobody's ever going to buy from you again, listen to you again, read you again, it's particularly in our parlance, you know.
You know, when I first started, back when ChatGPT came out, so again, about a year and a half ago, I started using it for show research, and it was working really good for a short period of time.
Yeah, it can do some good stuff with research.
Yeah, but then it got, I don't even know how to explain it. The answers became obtuse. It was generic, almost like listening to a politician answer a question, because I couldn't get an answer out of it anymore. And it was harder to get it to cite its sources, talking about it like it's a sentient being or something. But all around, it was a miserable experience. At one time, it was for show prep, it was a like a tool that helped me, you know? And then it just became... too much of a pain in the butt to even bother with. So I said, you know what? But I use AI, you know, my clips that go out. I don't know. Like I dump a ton of short content onto YouTube and it's giving me a ton of growth. And I have an AI platform called opus.pro. So when we're done here tonight, I will throw that video, this entire live stream in there. And within 15 minutes, it'll have me 35 shorts that I can put up on social, link back to this video over the next week.
Yeah. I share them on Instagram from time to time.
Yeah. So I don't mind that. I like a product that will eliminate busy work that I don't want to do, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, you just got to, you know, it's like an employee. I think people thought it would be like not an employee, like even better. Like I don't even have to check its work. It's perfect every time. It's just like an employee. You know, you got to go behind and see like, what did you say? What did you do? What are you doing? You know, and all that kind of stuff. If you want to use it, you know, I think there's viable uses for it, but you know, it doesn't fit with the work that I do.
Do you think in the, you know, in this modern kind of Netflix era where everything's kind of made for an algorithm, I guess maybe I'm going to interject my opinion here a little bit, but number one, like, I think there's going to be a place for shit built by an algorithm because the masses tend to consume it. But my opinion is that there's going to be lots of companies that are going to pay a premium for a human voice. Do you think there's kind of that area, like you, for instance, you know, James Walton, human created, because I'm starting to see things labeled as human created or creator created.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What do
yeah.
you think?
What I think in terms of the content creation side of things is you're going to have to have two different worlds, because the idea that we're in a short gap between where like we look at AI as a thing that we can use to make things maybe for work or to make things for fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what's really going to come is the day when you can say, based on what's your daughter's name again? Charlotte.
Charlotte. Yeah.
Based on Charlotte and I's favorite movies, can you make a movie for Dad and Charlotte to watch tonight that will hit all the buttons, you know, little action, little comedy, little this, little that, whatever your favorites are. And that's going to be what AI does for you. You know, I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, dude, you're going to play video games that are your video games. Like right, they're made off of everything that you've ever played, everything that you've ever liked, and things that you want to add to it. And you're going to play that video game. It's going to be the Jake video game. You know what I mean? And it's going to be the same thing with movies. So I think there's going to be that world of everything created for me, that's just, you know, how we are now, right? Like I want customized movies that only I see that are made right for the things that I like. And then there's going to be the world of reality, which is, you know, maybe I'll listen to the people today and see what they're talking about too. You know what I mean? That's what I think. I think it'll split between me, my very customized world that AI creates for me, because AI spends all its time with me, right? Like the new Galaxy has AI on it. This is not a new Galaxy, but the new Galaxy has AI on it. So that's the beginning of the end. You know what I mean? That means it's going to be with you all the time, and then it's going to create the world you want. And then if you decide to go out into the other world, then, you know, that's where we'll be.
So do you think the real world becomes AM radio, newspapers, over-the-air television, or like, do we just become old man yelling at a cloud, or do people pay a premium? What do you think?
No, I think I think our kids will draw a better balance in the digital and physical worlds. I do. I mean, there'll be outliers.
Sure.
Like there'll be kids that go in the VR world and never come out. I've said that for years. When I first put the VR headset on, I was like, oh, people are going to get lost in here for sure. But I think they're not going to have the pitfall of like, oh, this phone's kind of cool. And then 10 years go by and you're like, what have I been doing with this phone? You know, like, because it crept up on us, you know, they're going into the world where their parents their whole life are like, you know, all right, how about we put the phone down for a few hours? Let's go outside, balance it out a little bit. So I think they're going to be much better at doing that. You know, the people who are, you know, thoughtful about it.
I like that. That I, whatever was it, E3 or whatever the big tech, thing they'd all get together in Vegas every year. I can't remember the name of it now, but they canceled it a couple years ago. And anyway, this year, the product of the show was this new little AI device. And I can't remember what it was called, but it almost looked like a Game Boy SP or a Game Boy Advanced or something. The idea behind it is supposed to be a kind of an AI assistant that learns what you do.
Oh,
and the idea behind it is to separate you from your device so that you can, it's funny, separate you from your device, but include a new device,
with
right?
With a new device.
The idea is that it's supposed to automate all the busy stuff, you know, without you try send a message in your phone via voice, right? It might work, it might not, but this whole thing is supposed to kind of streamline all that that you get in the world a little more. And I see, yeah, I kind of like what you're coming from there. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I can see it in my 8-year-old already. So he's 8 years old and, he looks for the true pursuits when he gets done playing video games. It's almost like that was a fun hollow experience. Now I want to go outside and play outside. Like it's not like he finishes up and has a snack and drinks. It's like he'll finish playing video games and then he'll be like, you want to go play basketball? And I'm like, yeah, sure, we could do that. You know what I mean? So I think that the way people are going and all the knowledge we have about things like that almost sort of predisposes them to, because there's a good feeling that you get from digital fun, and then there's a good feeling that you get from the real thing. You know what I mean? And I don't think that those two will ever be the same. And I think you'll miss the real thing. You'll miss the real competition, the real, you know, women, the real all that stuff that's going to be presented on a platter. But for the, you know, I think for the weaker people in society, and maybe the people who are a little bit left behind or have trauma and those kinds of things that they can't escape, they may go away. They may go into that world where things are finally going my way for once, and they may decide I'm never coming out, you know?
I never watched it, but there was a film a couple of years ago that had Hugh Jackman in it, and it was about basically a world that was suffering an environmental crisis. The whole world was flooding, and the entire premise was that folks were escaping through nostalgia. So they were reliving old memories from when the world was good, and that got them by. They would just live. Oh my goodness.
That's happening right now.
100% it is.
Definitely happening right now. Yeah.
Dude,
that's what all these Marvel movies are. That's what all these superhero movies are.
I spent hours different times watching live streams of this dude that just uploads commercials from the 80s and the 90s.
Oh yeah, and they're great.
There is this euphoric feeling of watching ads that you watch, you know, eating cereal in your, you know, your pajamas in 1987. You know, how weird is that?
Well, rinse, repeat. I'll do your audience and you a big favor. Maybe. I don't know. Actually, you the tail end of rinse, repeat might be better. But there's a YouTube channel called Rinse Repeat. And what this guy did, he did God's work.
Okay.
He was up Saturday morning in 1989, 1990, all the way up through 2000. And all he did was hit record on them videotapes and somehow got those Saturday morning cartoons, commercials and all, uploaded to YouTube. It's called Rinse Repeat. And you can get it from like Fox from the 1991 Saturday morning, CBS cartoons 1992 Saturday morning. It's brilliant, man. I watched it with my kids. I tried to show
him. X-Men on there.
Oh, X-Men's on there. He's got all Toonami, Dragon Ball Z. He's got all kinds of stuff. He's a god, I'm telling you. I don't know.
What do you think, James? So we got this world where we stand kind of a artificial intelligence precipice, you know, where you and I are, well, me more than you, very quickly becoming the old man who doesn't necessarily have the experience with it. But we, as preppers, have kind of looked back at the homesteaders and at the guys, you know, the civil defense guys from the 50s and, you know, the people who would can and the people that knew how to shoot and all of that. Where do you think prepping goes? Like, number one, what do you feel about the state of prepping today?
Okay.
And then where do you think it goes after that? We can talk about where do you think it goes in the next 20 years?
Sure. Yeah, the state of today is it's never been, at least there's never been as many people talking about it. It's never been more palatable than it is right now. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, I do a little bit of consultation work. Not a lot. I don't have a lot of time to do it. But, you know, every so often people ask me and we'll spend enough money, so I'll do it.
Yeah.
Consult them on stuff, you know. And what I find most of the time, and I think this is where a lot of people are, maybe even a lot of preppers in general, not just new preppers. Number one, they don't necessarily know where they want to go.
Right.
Like they have an idea that they get garnered from Facebook or a movie or a book, and they don't know how to get there. And then, you know, the other thing is they don't even necessarily know. They don't know what they don't know.
Yep.
You know, so that makes it hard. So I think that's probably the state of prepping right now for the masses of people that are pooling in. Like they seen a meme on Facebook and it was a cabin and a creek and a chicken coop and a garden and a lady hanging clothes. And they're like, that's what I want. You know what I mean? And then there's just a lot of conversations that you have to have with people so they can start to wrap their head around that. And, you know, then there's things like, but I talk to a lot of people who are like, we just want to be able to bug out from the city, you know, and we're going to go out and live out there for 4 to 6 months in our RV. And you know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, things like that, you know, and it's not like, it's just, they don't know what they don't know. You know what I mean? They've seen it work or they read about it working or, you know, something along those lines. And so I think right now the state of prepping is you got people who are kind of hemmed in been at it for a while, and then you got a whole new wave of people who are trying to figure out, meanwhile living their lives, right? Like, they're not lucky like us. We get to do what we do and spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff and learning about it and testing products, all that kind of stuff. They're doing 9 to 5s if they're lucky, probably more like 9 to 9s.
Yep.
And then raising kids and all that kind of stuff. And then in the back burner, they're like, oh yeah, I guess I should probably prepare for the end of the world too. That's probably something that needs my attention. So, you know, people like us and what we do, I just think that it's so important that we spread the word, because people can dig into an hour long podcast and really learn something about a topic like that, you know? So that's my diagnosis right now. I think we're all going to head towards much more self-sufficiency as a people. If we're a member of a society that has the money to do something like that, you know what I mean? It's really hard for me to imagine this next generation coming up and being like, let's just order all the food we need for today. And you know what I mean? Make no preparations, not worry about the crime wave, have no concerns about self-defense. I mean, right out of the gate, just with the explosion of like jujitsu and MMA, kids will beat the hell out of you. You know what I mean? So I think we're definitely in a better place. And I think in the next 20 years, you said 20 years, right?
Sure. Yeah. Let's go 20, 10 or 20, whatever you want. Yeah. I say 20.
2044. So we'll have surpassed the looming 2030.
Right. Yes. Or 2035, depending on whom we're speaking with.
So. Right. I mean, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to how things go with this. We're living in this time, man, that's so freaking amazingly cool, because the people are standing up to the, what I call the lizards. I call them the lizards, the people at top, the billionaires, the WEF folks, you know, the Great Reset authors. And, you know, we're seeing it in Europe. We're seeing it in America. We're seeing it all over the place where the people are where our very basic freedoms are being attacked and people are finally standing up to it. So how that all plays out, obviously, is going to, you know, decide how prepping plays out in the next 20 years. But I think that people are going to see the benefits of not just the idea of storing extra food, storing extra water, but the benefits of living the life human, you know, living the human life, not the Amazon 2-hour delivery life, the rapid, convenient, comfortable life. I really do think that we'll move almost backward, you know, backward to a time where we create more things with our own hands. There's just so much information about health and fitness and, you know, the brain and all those different things. And it's all leading people to, like, you need to be in like fundamental vitamin D, right? Like fundamentally get in the sun more often and you'll be feeling much better. So I think those things are just going to push people into that direction. I can't imagine in 20 years, people are like, I'm feeling a little depressed. I think I'll take SSRIs over diet, sun, fitness, you know what I mean? And whatever other things we discover by then. So those are going to be the answers. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the way doctors do business now, it's changed in that way.
Sure. Like
when I was a little kid, probably when you were a little kid, you go to the doctor, they'd send you home with the pink bottle, tastes like bubble gum. Right. Yep. It didn't matter what was wrong with you. They'd be like, just take these antibiotics.
You're good.
Yeah. And now I take my kids to the doctor. They never give them any medicine. They're like, oh, they got a virus. Just, hydrate them and they'll get better. And I think that's the way things are going to go, you know?
A more holistic approach?
Yeah. More
as in the entire, you know, use drugs where they're needed, but, diet, exercise, prevention, all the above.
I think it'll be that balance between the technology so unbelievable and so disconnecting that we have to have the human element be as powerful too. You know what I mean? Like we have to balance this technological world out with like more time outside, more time doing things that humans do, all that kind of stuff.
So I've always said over the last, Becky and I have basically been preppers, even if not by name, since we got married. So we're going on 20 years now. And
probably for the last, congratulations.
Yeah, you know, we're doing all right. But for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, especially since I kind of got into sharing what I knew, I always talk about how we the baby preppers, we have to talk them down off the ledge. And what I mean by that is folks have always come to us because of an event. You know, it's Y2K or the 2008 collapse or 2012 because of the Mayans.
Well, how else do you become a prepper, you know?
Sure. The thing is, though, like you said, there's so many people who are just kind of like, I want to incorporate prepping because, I don't know, maybe society has this generalized anxiety disorder. I'm not really sure what it is, but, you know, it's just everything kind of feels like it sucks for some people.
Yeah.
So how do we, because I always say, you know, fear is a great short-term motivator, but you need a purpose long-term to stick with it and realize that being prepared is a great idea for folks. Yeah. So how do we help the people that are just kind of like, I'd like to be a little more prepared. You know, where do we start with them? Because there's not that big, I mean, maybe there is, maybe folks are, you know, into whatever the scientific issue du jour happens to be right now. Where do we start bringing them in?
Well, I think, unfortunately, if you want to get anywhere with it, it has to be commitment based. It has to be, you have to start to integrate things into your life that are, you know, daily routine items, things that, like, you know, one of the things that changed us big time was when we first got chickens. And I remember having chickens and having this thing. And it was one of those moments where it was like, I can't turn this off now.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to take care of these chickens, feed, you know, clean, make sure the coop's locked up, worry about predators and all that kind of stuff. When prepping is a list, then the list almost never gets done. You know what I mean? Right. That's my experience. But when prepping becomes a collection of commitments, that's when it becomes your life. And then before you know it, it's like, I'm just living this life. And on top of just living this life, it's way better than the way I used to live, you know, and not even from like a paranoid, like when the bomb drops, I'm ready. But like from a just my life is way better. So the angle that I have taken since 2018 is that, you know, preppers are not going to be remembered as the bunker living, you know, pale Nosferatu looking scared people who you know, came to the surface to get the beans and went back into their shelters. I think that we've created a movement that is pushing people towards that direction that we talked about, which is sort of the anti-technology, anti-AI, back to human skills and sort of human living. And the way that you have to get new people into that is you have to push them into commitment. You know what I mean? Whatever that looks like for them, whatever kind of commitment fits into their lifestyle, that could be self-defense. That could be gun range time every month. That could be something along, or buy a gun because now you have a gun. So now you have to commit to gun safety, get a concealed carry license. Maybe now you're committing to that. You know what I mean? My day is full of all of these weird commitments that they don't seem like commitments to me anymore because it's just my life. But had I not made those commitments, then I'd be a totally different person. I'd be a guy with a list and a crappy backpack with crappy stuff in it, probably.
A bunch of tactical gear that, you know, and a whole bunch of broken promises to yourself, hey?
Yeah, because the reason you have to push people to commitment is because they're living, why that you're talking about the anxiety level of everyone, is they're living like a purposeless, comfort and convenience driven lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like, their lifestyle is driven by comfort and convenience. How can we make this more comfortable, more convenient? Can I get more food, more bacon on it? Can I get more? You know what I mean? And it's just all comfort driven. And so, like, I think when your life is almost too good, then everything in the news becomes like, oh my God, oh my God. Oh, can you believe that Robert De Niro died? I'm going to cry over it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. And then the you know, the routine of preparedness is, a lot of times there's some stuff that sucks that you have to do, and that helps balance, you know?
Yeah. I like that actually quite a bit. You're right. And you know, what is it? Is it Laszlo's hierarchy of needs or Maslow?
Maslow.
You know, what is it? Self-actualization, right? That's at the top.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I've said that. It a lot, you know, when you're worried about where your next meal is going to come from or the saber-toothed tiger that's going to get you, you're not real worried about, unfortunately, a generalized anxiety disorder or even the fate of the world. You're just worried about your next meal, right?
Yeah.
But when you get up to that top of that pyramid, there, you know, everything becomes a worry, doesn't it? It's weird.
Well, that's it. That's it. I think what Maslow didn't account for and what we didn't account for, I'm glad you brought this up because I was literally thinking about this 2 days ago, was that like that hierarchy or that pyramid, it seems like if you climb it and get to the top and forget about the other things, they start to fall through. They start to dissolve. Almost like they dissolve behind you as you climb, unless you fortify them, you know?
Sure.
Because that's what it seems like now. You look around at the price of food. You look around at the quality of water, the quality of education, the quality of safety in society. And what you have is a bunch of people at the top of their hierarchy thinking that self-actualization is all they have to worry about now, you know? And the food costs more than ever. The water sucks. The education sucks. You know what I mean? And it's,
I do.
I think it's because you gotta nurture the whole thing. You know?
You know what? Folks in here are going to roll their eyes when I mention this next dude, but it makes a connection here. But do you ever read, or do you know of Marshall McLuhan at all?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He was the medium is the message guy.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yep. Yeah.
So he was a Canadian, that or not, but I mean, the dude died in the early 80s, and his stuff is more prescient for today than it was then.
Well, and yeah, a lot of times you're talking about people
climbing that pyramid, getting to the top, and everything else disappearing. One of his big things was each time humanity, well, two things. They'd create technology, and it would become an extension of the human body. So, you know, the printing press became an extension of the human brain. You know, the gun became an extension of the human hands, right? But he said the downside to that was that everything that comes before it ends up getting forgotten. So you learn how to fire a gun, you forget how to fire
a bow and arrow. Right. Yeah, I like that.
So, we got all these people who are 100% fully actualized at the very top, but they don't know how to take care of food and water and shelter and safety.
Yeah,
dude, I think we just come up with an interesting philosophy.
No, it's true, man. Like I said, I was thinking about the other day, the self-actualized person, he starved to death or you know, drink bad water and diarrhea himself to death in a matter of a week in the wild or something like that. The lone Canadian brings up a good point, though, in the chat. He said, doesn't prepping become comfort-driven? Better way to make fire, better shelter, better food supply. And I'm glad you said that, because what that brings to mind is, you know, better way to make fire, better shelter, better food supply. It's comfort, but it's comfort that comes at a cost. And I think that's the important thing. You know, it's not comfort that comes at a click. Like, right. Oh, I want a big new blanket. Click. You know what I mean? Like comfort that comes from your hands and your work. That's different. You know, when you fire up the fireplace from that wood that you split, and you're sitting there and your wife's drinking coffee and the house is warming up because you split wood with an axe. That's way different than the kind of comfort that most Americans live, you know, like under covers in a nice expensive bed. I don't want to get out. It's a different thing. But you're right. Comfort is a part of the deal, lone Canadian, but I just think it's an earned comfort that is what's kind of, you know, feeds the soul rather than leaves you hollow.
It's a preventative comfort as opposed to a reactive comfort too, because prepping, you're doing things ahead of time, you know, hence the entire term prepping, as in before, you know, so you're teaching yourself how to build a fire, you're stocking away food, you're getting yourself in shape. All of those are preventative. Whereas comfort from today is,
I feel anxious.
Yeah. So click, 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 here comes Amazon right. So yeah. And again, I guess that's where it comes from. Prepping just means to be prepared ahead of time, or I guess prepared means ahead of time anyhow, you know?
Right. Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting. So where do you go on the self-actualization pyramid to make sure that it doesn't, do you have to like make periodic trips back down to shore up the foundation or what?
Well, I guess you have to probably know your aims. And consider your aims in the time that you spend after those aims, right? We have a lot of people who have self-actualized over the idea of equity. You know what I mean? In the most opportune filled nation on the planet.
Right.
So, you know, when you overcorrect for that, and you're sitting at the top of your hierarchy and all you're worried about is that thing, then, or that collection of things that goes along with it, yeah, then you're going to lose. You're going to lose those basics. And, you know, and also, I think it's also a product of just not the disconnect from what the earth is, you know, like to being living on the earth. Like, what is a million people a day will yell at you for over climate change. And I always wonder, like, how many of these people have like camped in the year last year? Like, right. Have they been on the planet? Have they only been on hardwood floors? Have they been on in the planet and seen, like, you know what I mean? Like, would they survive?
Of all things, I listened to this random podcast the other day, a movie review podcast, and these two guys were talking and they're like, I just cannot understand why anyone would ever get a license in this day and age.
And to drive?
And I thought, that has got to be one of the most random takes I had ever heard. Yep. Well, guess what? The two dudes had lived their entire lives, grew up as kids in New York City, and were right? So when your entire mindset is whatever the square miles are of, you know, Manhattan and New York City, well, of course you're going to think the entire world doesn't need a license, right?
I don't know, though. I mean, you wouldn't think that way.
No, you're right. You're damn right I wouldn't.
Well, I don't. I mean, I think there are a bunch of people in New York who are smart enough to go, I know I grew up in New York and New York's great, but there's roads all over the world. Like, people drive. Everything that comes into New York that makes it great comes in on an 18-wheeler, you know, like. Yeah, but like you said, you know, these guys, maybe their whole life is the pinnacle is we review movies and go out to swanky restaurants in New York, and we're happy to do that for the rest of our lives and pretend like, you know, nothing else exists.
And maybe, I mean, that's it. If you were, you know, Aboriginal in North America in the 1400s, you know, your world would be, even if you're nomadic, your world would be pretty small. And how blown, you know, I mean, you wouldn't even consider the fact, I mean, you're worried about making sure you have food for the next season. You wouldn't even consider the fact that some dude's going to come over the horizon in a man-made ship with people that speak a different language, right? So, I don't know. It's just, it's mind-blowing, right? It's boggling.
Oh, yeah. Sure. No doubt about it. I mean, that's, you know, who's coming over our horizon next? That's the big question, right? Or what?
Right.
So, we'll have to, you know, one of the things we prepared. Right?
Oh, look who it is. Jester, it's Doomsday Podcast. He wants to know what this live's about. It's about
everything and nothing, my friend. Yes. Everything and nothing.
It's about two friends getting together, catching up, and hopefully sharing with each other our passions and you know, our thoughts on the future of the world, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. It's we probably should have done an hour before we did this hour.
We'll be all
right. And you could have gave it to some special group or something like that.
I got a Patreon so far, but, you know, it's coming. It's starting to grow.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's great.
Patreon. You talked about a pyramid. And, you know, it's not even a pyramid. It's because it's always printed two-dimensionally, right? So it's pretty thin. But for me, my prepping experience has been more like, you ever go to like an airport and they have 5, 6, 7 levels of parking? And to get up to each one, you drive, you know, it's like a spiral.
Oh, sure. Up. Yeah. Yeah.
And for me, it's like, that's what my prepping journey has been like. I'll start at the basics at the bottom, you know, and then I will go around. And all of a sudden, after I've made my full rotation of a journey, whatever that happens to be, I'll come back and revisit that skill. But I'm at level 2, you know, come back and revisit it again at level 3.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting concept on the same thing, because I'm making progress to the top, but I'm also coming back around and revisiting that stationary point, except I'm taller up, you know?
Oh, most definitely. No, I see that. Patricia Williams is in chat. You have an absolute gem with you tonight.
I know that name from somewhere. You know?
I'll just leave it at that. Wow. That surprised me. Thank you for joining.
We have had some pile of new listeners lately. A lot of them are coming in off YouTube Shorts. I've been I'm just starting. Have you tried any of the YouTube live streams vertical yet at all?
I'm not allowed to live stream on anything I'm on YouTube.
Poor James.
They hate me so much, dude. Dave Jones accidentally posts podcasts on YouTube sometimes because he does it through his phone. They'll just run a podcast through the phone and forget to turn off YouTube every time, dude. Every single podcast that man does, YouTube emails me immediately. You've been disconnected from YouTube. Your Spreaker profile has been disconnected.
No
every
way.
Time. Yeah, they we are totally, I don't even know why. I mean, once I have no idea.
Once you get but, on a
so
list.
So whatever.
Yeah,
is what it is. I mean, I don't lose sleep over it at all. Not even the least. But I do like your concept, though, of leveling up via skill set and practice and so on and so forth. You know,
for me, it was when I think it was mind blowing when I first found out about the whole idea of a modern Renaissance man, because I always used to be this dude in high school. I and probably got a touch of ADHD or something, but I would, you know, join a new hobby like it was the end of the world passion, you know, and I would do it for 2-3 months, 6 months, whatever, till I, you know, come up to a modicum of superiority, you know, and then I drop it like a bad habit. And then, but 3, 4, 5, 8 years later, I'd come back to it again. I'd revisit it. Same thing, pattern over and over again. And I realized that prepping had become a symptom of that, or maybe a solution to it. And so that's where that whole process came from.
I'm telling you, one of the big things we're doing in 2024 at PBN is literal routines. Like, we're creating literal monthly routines for our listeners. Mm. And me personally, I mean, there's definitely like a personal self-serving angle here. There are things on those routines that I need to focus on. Like, this month's routine is pretty comms heavy stuff. Well, at least there's two things on there that are, you know, comms driven. But these routines are kind of like what you're talking about, except taking the I'm kind of done with this now off the table. Sure. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, in January we're psyched and we're doing all this preparedness and fitness stuff, and last month was a little spiritual heavy and that kind of, so it really is a collection of tasks, a day A and a day B set of tasks, you know what I mean, that you follow, you know, one after the other, Monday through Friday. And then we have a weekly task, we have a family task each month, stuff like that. But it really does take that, for me, and probably for many of the listeners who do it, is it takes away that concept of, I don't want to do that this week, which turns into, I don't want to do that this month, which turns into, I didn't do that at all in 6 months, or right, I didn't do that at all in 2023. So that's what I'm trying to achieve with that, is to stay on that freaking parking lot, you know? One thing we do every month is dry fire practice, and I'm telling you, you know, dry fire practice is what it is. I don't know how many people do it, don't do it religiously. I certainly didn't do it religiously until starting these routines. And it's just, after a month, it was like, I felt like it sounds like marriage counseling in my head. That's what it sounds like. Between me and my everyday carry firearm. That's what it feels like. It feels like we sat down and went to marriage counseling, and now we're a totally different couple, you know?
I love it.
Because we're spending more time together. And it's just, I don't know. It's the remedy for what you're talking about, you know? It's the exact remedy for that, which is rigor.
Well, there
but
is
it's not that bad, though, you know? It's actually not really that bad. I mean, all the tasks collectively are less than an hour for the day, you know? And it's just, I don't know. Seems to
if
work.
You want to look at any of the great people in the world who's ever done anything great, it was because of routine. There's no, anybody wants to know, how do I get great at something? How do I become a YouTuber? How do I become prepared?
Reps.
Every single friggin' day,
it.
You know?
That's it.
I'm speaking at Self-Reliant, well, actually a few different places on my spring kind of tour. And one of my presentations this year is going to be called Failure is Not an Option. And the whole idea behind it is greatness through doing the mundane every day. And the whole idea, again, 1% better every day is 3,800% better at the end of the year.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, you're speaking to a former chef, man. Chefs, while they had Food Network and they had all their cool moment, I guess it's still going on, I don't know, but chefs had that moment where they were king. You know what I mean? And the truth behind the chef, particularly the line cook, is, but even the chef, even the executive chef to some degree, is that's what it is. It's the life of the monotonous. It's the bring in the salmon, fillet the salmon, cut the salmon into 9-ounce portions, sell all the salmon. Guess what comes in tomorrow?
More salmon.
fillet the salmon, cut it in a knife. You know what I mean? And that's your life. And as a line cook, it's the same thing. Like the dream or the fantasy that you're mixing all, like you're a chemist and you're mixing all these, like, oh my God, this is groundbreaking flavor. No, the scallops, there's four scallops to the dish. This is how you make the sauce. This is how you plate the dish. If you deviate, you're fired. That's right. Why we're a successful restaurant. You know what I mean? That's why restaurants are successful. You don't go to a restaurant to be like, I wonder what the hell they're going to throw all over my plate when I order the strip steak.
Right. You because know? You go, what do you say about a restaurant? You got to go to this place because they have the best strip loin or they have the best ribeye. That is what they're known for.
Of course. Yeah. Just imagine if it was the way that the sort of fantasy mentality, like the chef's going to make you what he wants tonight. No, I don't want that. I'm here for that ravioli I had last time I was here. It was awesome. But yeah, that's what it is. It's the life of the mundane.
When people get a peek behind the curtain, you know, they see the wizard or whatever, you know, the operator behind the curtain, they realize, oh, wow, really? That's what it takes to be successful, or that's what it takes to be good at something, is just doing it. But I don't want to do it for 4 years.
Oh, James. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. That's the suck part. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Just the other day I was saying, because one of the parts of the routine this month is a yoga routine. And I was saying, you know, doing physical stuff, lifting weights and running and stuff like that for what's been 20 years now has its effect. But I'm lucky enough that I don't have any injuries. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of that has to do with that consistency of taking care of your body also. You know what I mean? And again, nobody wants to do that stuff. Nobody wants to do the working out, and nobody wants to do the maintenance after the working out on top of it. But if you do it, then you can, you know, you're not like, oh my God. You know, I run into people my age. I just turned 38 last month. I run into people my age. They're like, if they've really given up, it's over. You know,
that's sad.
You're like, you want me to wheel you around? Actually, I'll tell you a real quick funny story.
Sure.
I was 23 or something like that. And I was working at a Capital One kitchen, like a kitchen inside a giant Capital One campus.
Okay.
I just moved to Virginia. I couldn't find a job. And I'm working with this kid who was really fun, man. His name was Larry. He was a great guy. We became friends for a little while. And Larry was telling me, dude, when you turn 25, your knees are going to go. That's when knees go. They go when you turn 25. And I was like, Larry, that's not going to happen to me. I can promise you. But these weird things like happen to people when they don't take care of themselves with that same sort of repetitive, you know, today's the routine. This is what I got to do. Or consequence, you know.
I don't know if we talked. I can't remember now if it was before the show or during the show, but we were talking about youth sports and how, you know, my older kids didn't do a lot of that. And now my younger ones are into it. And, you know, it's easy to brush off the benefits of youth sports because you don't, you know, you're just like, ah, oh, it's just something for mom and dad to get excited about, or, you know, for kids to get competitive. But it's kind of cool that, you know, I've been taken right now. It's been Charlotte to the volleyball games, and you see the life skills that they're learning, you know?
Oh yeah.
So the beginning of school competition this year, Charlotte still served underhand for volleyball. She is now an expert overhand server for volleyball.
Wow.
And you know how that happened? It happened through reps. It also happened through her being absolutely disappointed and pissed off because for two or three games, she couldn't do it. And then today she stood up and she did it. I don't know how many aces in a row, but it was, I think she closed the game out with six, you know, the game she was in with six serves right in a row. Go from underhand serving to that through reps, right?
Yeah, they're huge lessons.
That's just
man.
One little thing of greatness.
Yeah, they're huge lessons. My son lost his, he's eight. So it's, you know, it's not the NBA, but he lost his championship game by 1 point.
Oh.
And, you know, you could say that. You could say, oh, but like, I looked at my wife and I was like, he's going to be hell next season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that is like a cigarette burn on your eye. You know what I mean? You're not going to forget about it. You're going to carry that wound for a long time, and he's going to get much better because of it, for sure.
There was an interview with a university professor the other day, and I really wish I'd have saved the story, and I can't find it now. But he was talking about how we're doing pretty good finding employees for the new daycares. But something that we find is a ton of ghosting. People interview and then not show up. Or you'll set up an interview and they won't show up. Or they'll fill out your paperwork and they won't show up. And this guy was talking about it. And he said, you know, one thing that this generation needs to realize is that hardship and anxiety are par for the course. You know, instead of the first time you feel it running away, the more you power through it, the more resilient and self-reliant you're going to be down the road.
Oh, yeah. I think that's parents. I think that I feel my wife and I give our kids too much, and we were poor. You know what I mean? Both of us. You can do it, but you got to know you're doing it. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is. I think there's a lot of people coming up because what's the biggest thing that happened to our generation and maybe the generation before us? The biggest thing was dad's gone. Mom and dad aren't together. Like divorce was it was everywhere. You know what I mean? And it may still be, I don't know. I know a lot more couples that are together with kids than aren't. But I feel like that left a hole in parents, and parents got their chance to be parents, and they were like, dude, we're going to be parents. You know what I mean? And maybe a little too much shielding. You know what I mean? And that's what's happened.
Again, it's that pendulum swing amongst generations too. You know, every generation reacts against the generation that came before it.
Sure. Oh yeah.
But we don't just react, we overreact. Right. So that's where the extremes come.
I think that's an important human trait. I do. I think that, I think that's what's happened a lot with the culture wars in America and in the world. I think that's what it is. I think that we do that. We overshoot and then we correct. You know what I mean? It just seems like that's just part of it, you know? And I think because usually you're overcoming something that's a big deal. You know what I mean? It's like we have to overcome Nazism, atomic bomb. Then correct. You know, let's not drop any more of those. Those things are legit. And so I think that's kind of what happens culturally too. We overcorrect, you know, like white people suck, kill them all. Hold on. Sorry, we went a little too far.
Let's go back to the middle, you know?
And exactly.
And it is 100%. And I don't know, you know, wherever you stand on it, whether it's Darwinian or whether it's just, you know, innate survival instincts in humanity. I think we realize when we get really close to the precipice that we're like, shit, we got to go the other way.
Yeah.
And then kind of pick up, you know, terminal velocity, and we're like, better slow down again. Let's go back the other way.
Yeah. My worry is that we just, for a long time, like the precipice has been further away and we've had more time to break. And now we have less and less time to break, it feels like.
And it could be. But I don't know. Maybe not. Again, you know, again, I'm a realist, but I'm a bit of an optimist, you know, and good. I truly think that every generation has thought it was the end of the world coming.
No, they definitely have.
I mean,
have you ever read the Bible?
Yeah, literally, you know, since, you know, at least 5,000-7,000 years we're talking.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. So it's always right around the corner for sure. But I think, you know, I guess they realize that humans need, like you were talking about, some kind of motivation fundamentally.
Absolutely. Right?
Just being like, yeah, drink all the wine you want and take a harem of women doesn't push society forward in the way you want.
Not even a little bit. Actually, probably goes the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to send you a book for the daycare, Tim.
On
the back channel, you got to let me know what the daycare address is because...
Freaking right, I will. What is it? Because... I'm just shameless plug here, but I know you're always working on a book. So you need to tell me what you're working on.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's super exciting, man. It's for a long time. I had this concept in my head about the indoctrinating the youth with preparedness. And if you listen,
it's only a bad word if it's done badly.
That's the way I look at it. If it's going to save their life later, I don't think it'll be a big deal. We used to have Brock from FEMA, I think he was from FEMA or something like that, a clip on the old PBN intro, and he used to say we have to create a true culture of preparedness starting at a very young age and filtering all the way up. And my thought was, then we need a cartoon. You know, that was my original idea, was we need a preparedness-driven cartoon, but not a suck cartoon, because cartoons are kind of crap. And then I realized I don't have a cartoon budget to work with. So... I started with this concept that we have titled The World of Ready. And The World of Ready is being illustrated as we speak. And once the book's out, I'm going to tell you about this group of people that came together to make the world of Ready. And you're not even going to believe it, because it's, well, it's actually incredibly beautiful. But let's get the book finished first. But basically, it's a each volume of the World of Ready is geared towards a certain specific type of disaster. But rather than like my special forces uncle teaching me how to prepare for the wildfires, the kids are transported, and, you know, I don't want to give it all away because it's really, really fun. The kids are transported to a different world. They're transported to a place called the World of Ready, and they're guided by a character named Uda. And Uda, many of you probably know what Uda is. It's a preparedness kind of staple. Actually, I think it's more of a military staple, but it's an acronym for Orient, Observe, Decide, Act. And Uda is just sort of the guy who travels them through this weird world where they meet people who live on this planet who can help them with exactly what they need to learn. And then they head back to their, you know, their real life and show mom and dad what they've learned. And of course, you know, the goal at the end of each book is to have something that the children can do, you know, so that we're writing a book about wildfires, and they're going to have a sort of a small list and a way to build their own little, you know, wildfire evacuation bag so that, you know, very young age, they can be involved in this thing.
It's like the magic. You remember the magic school bus?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the magic school bus for getting kids prepared instead of teaching about science.
Yeah, like something that similar. There's not a whole lot of education on the disaster itself,
which is probably
like
the best.
Yeah, like it's not like, here's how wildfires start. It's humans' fault. They right. suck. We should annihilate them all.
Everything's going to burn. Yeah,
nah, it's literally much more like, here's the problem. The children are scared. Magical world of wonder. Fun and learning, you know, because that's what I think is missing in a lot of kids' stuff these days.
Absolutely. You know,
it's really cool. You're going to love it. The kids are going to love it. I can promise you that. And
well, I will buy a couple more from you because we have 3 daycares now. So
Do you really?
Yeah, we're building an empire, brother. So
No clue, man. I'm over here thinking that you're just running the one shop there.
Now we expanded to another city and bought one, and we're building the third.
So you really are struggling with help then, if you have 3 different locations, I bet.
My wife is struggling with help. Yes. Yeah,
I know,
she's
man.
She's doing good, but
my wife is, I mean, not my wife, my sister is a business owner, and she's in the dog grooming business, and you can make a lot of money in the dog grooming business if you want to work, you know, as an employee. And
yeah,
she's having so much trouble finding people that will do that kind of work, unfortunately.
It's funny, we got a dog groomer right next door to our daycare. So kids and animal people look after them, right? But
yeah, so the World of Ready probably be ready at the end of March. It's all written. We're just looking over illustrations, making sure everything's the way we want it. And then we're going to hope to dominate. I don't know. You know, there's nothing that is really, I don't know if there's anything in the books that's really sort of political at all.
Good.
You know, I didn't make it a point to be or not be political at all in the books. They really were like, let's make a story that kids would really like. Probably like the Phantom Tollbooth is what moved me the most with the World of Ready. You know, because that was such a great book. But yeah, look for it, man. I'll come back on maybe and we'll talk about it.
A little more in detail. I'll be on the road when it comes out, but send me the links and we will share it amongst the community, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we're excited.
No so doubt. I always take, I again, I'm like, yeah, everybody should know who the Intrepid Commander is. But then again, I remember that I reach out to all kinds of different crazy communities. And Jules here comes in from the Midwest preparedness community. And so it sounds like she doesn't know you, James. So as we wrap up here, brother, tell everybody a little bit about, again, what the Prepper Broadcast Network is, but more importantly, how they can find you and how they can throw money at you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. PrepperBroadcasting.com is the best place to listen to all the show. Well, maybe not the best, but it's a good starting spot. We have our live chat over there, our live podcasts. We do several live podcasts throughout the week. So that's a good place to start. But anywhere you listen to podcasts, if you look up the Prepper Broadcasting Network, you'll find us. And it's way more than just me. That's what you have to remember. When I do these shows, sometimes people come looking for me and they go like through half a week and I'm not there. There's 15 different hosts and we do all kinds of different shows. I mean, our shows are more and more diverse as the years go on. We now have a family show called Raising Values.
Yeah.
Phil from the Matter of Facts podcast and his wife. And it's not prepping really at all. It really truly is family values and the questions of raising a family this day and age. And we have our Alliance program on Sundays as well. That's just a Christian based sort of freestyle prayer by a really knowledgeable former stockbroker turned tutor who found Jesus and is really one of my favorite people on the planet. And the rest of the week is all prepping and news stuff to that degree. A great group of people from all over the country. Tim himself is included. He's on Thursday nights following our professionally trained gunsmith, Dane D. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a tall ask. Hop in, check it out, see if you like it, because to take on the Prepper Broadcasting Network is a serious ask. We have incredibly dedicated listeners who are like, I'm not caught up. Can you guys slow down with this?
So many.
Yeah, it's so much.
But you know what's funny? I had somebody message me the other day, and it does not matter how many times you try to make people aware of different things. This was the inverse this time, though. This was somebody who had been listening to my podcast for almost 2 years via the PBN network stream and didn't know that I had a YouTube channel or that I streamed other days of the week. And I was like, I do my best. So, and it goes the other way too, right? I try to share the PBN gospel as much as I can. And Jules is like, that's great. I love it.
No one knows who you are. That's what I always tell myself.
Right.
Especially when you hit platitudes, when you're like, oh man, we had this many listeners this week. That's a record. No one knows who you are.
Dude, I realized that when I went to friggin' prepper camp and I'm talking to people and they're like, oh yeah, what do you do? And I said, I would always lead with, I'm a regular contributor to the Expert Council on the Survival podcast.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Jack friggin' Spirko has 250,000 listeners. And I bet you 8 times out of 10 people are like, now who's that? And I'm like, if they don't know,
like I
you
said,
know, 250,000, the literal survival podcast, then I got no hope, brother.
A good way to go through life as an entrepreneur, I think, is to say that to yourself all the time. Nobody
absolutely
knows
who you are. You start getting too big of a head, right?
Well, just I think it helps when you think you're making headway and you can remind yourself you're not. But so, yeah, we're available at iTunes, you know, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere where podcasts are. You can find the Prepper Broadcasting Network. If you get to listening to us, or if you want to really sort of hijack your brain with a serious undertaking of preparedness, go to pbnfamily.com. That is our membership website. That is really probably the biggest funder of the podcast network. Actually, Tim, you know what I did before the show? I've never done this before.
Yes.
I put a promo code for the word workshop. For $10 off of our full year membership, which is $60 for more stuff than you'll ever be able to watch, read, fill out, listen to. We have courses up there. We have routines up there. We have all kinds of spreadsheets for preparing your whole year, your food storage, tons of stuff. But if you go to pbnfamily.com and you use the promo code workshop, you get $10 off your year membership with us.
I will send that out in the description afterwards. I'll make sure it gets added. But you know what's really funny? I got an email this morning from my bank that said a charge is going through, but we flagged it because we weren't sure if it was legit or not. And it was for my re-up on my annual Prepper Broadcasting Network membership.
What's illegitimate about PVN? I think the bank paid it too.
The fact that we're shutting our stuff down with that bank. So it kicked it as like, why something trying to go through a bank account that's really not active anymore?
I will swap
that out. But it's really funny that you mentioned it because it was this morning while we were at volleyball. What are the chances?
Oh man, I'll tell you what. If you haven't been there in a while,
Dude, I am so, I don't even barely listen to podcasts. You know, I'm so
busy creating it.
You know how it is.
Yeah, you're doing your thing. No, I get it. But yeah, it's an absolute inundation over there. PBNfamily.com. Go check it out. Like I said, if you want to be just pile-drived with preparedness for an incredible value, everything you could need, it really will come down to your willpower to rise to the occasion to take advantage of all the stuff over there. It's not because we planned it that way. It's because we've been building that for like 5 years. So we've been doing courses and all kinds of different stuff is just piled up over there. So yeah, that's the deal. Use the promo code workshop, $10 off. It's a great deal. Tim, am I forgetting anything?
We got
the website. We got the podcast. I don't know. That's good enough.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, make it easy. PBNfamily.com and code, promo code workshop. You get $10 off. But I mean, it like you said, it's a virtual treasure trove. If you want to get pile driven, is that the past
pile
tense?
Driven,
pile drive? Pile driven by preparedness. Then hop on in, jump off the top rope with a squared circle, and body slam yourself into the Prepper Broadcast Network.
Look, if you follow along with what we do over there, you'll be a different human being by July. I can promise you that much. The 110%. Spreadsheets and all that kind of stuff. It's a tall ask, but if you want to get really prepared, we can do that for you. There's no doubt about it. But above and beyond that is get to know the PBN family. Some of our amazing listeners are in these live chats. I think they're mostly in the YouTube. We just have a great community. You know what I mean? It's an amazing group of people over there. Well, yourself included, Tim.
I appreciate you, James. Thank you, brother, for coming on. We will. I didn't even look back. I think it's been over a year since you've been on here. So we
too long. I know that much.
We can't go 12 months or more without you coming back. So
I agree with you. Well, good luck on your trip, Tim. I wish I could be there for all those things. I'm in the same pickle that you're in, with the precious years. But once the precious years are up, we'll definitely be doing some of the rounds together.
We build the life we want to live. And, you can do... You can do anything you want, but you can't do everything you want, right?
Yep. There are, what is it? There are no solutions, only compromises or something like that.
Yeah. 100%, man. It's right. But I'm not going to see you at Prepper Camp this year, but we will see each other again. So thank you, man.
All right, sir. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Workshop family. You guys are awesome.
Hang in the back for just a sec there, James. I'll close up and I'll be back with you. All right, guys. That's James. It's been a while since he's been on. And, I try to do my damnedest to make sure you guys know about Prepper Broadcast Network. But like everything, you have 1,000 spinning plates up in the air all at once. But James was a guy that reached out to me early on, in my content creation journey. And he gave me a platform not that I deserve a platform now, but he gave me a platform long before I'd really built a platform at all. And I'll be eternally grateful for it. He's a dude that I consider a brother. And he also keeps me caffeinated at Prepper Camp. We never even thought about talking about Disaster Coffee. But if you're looking for good coffee, hit him up on that too, guys. But take advantage of that code. But more than anything, give him a listen. Add them. And, James is there. Put him in your podcast feed and support him any way you can. So, folks, thank you very much. This was a great Sunday evening conversation. I hope you helped wind up a great week. Go out there and get shit done next week. And as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.